from these thoughts and behaviors, and how it connects to the relationship with others. And with that, it can come with a lot of roots of insecurity, especially if you have an inflated ego or a weak ego. Both are rooted in insecurity. And as well, back to the Buddhism thing, the ego is essentially, you know, the root of suffering, which from Buddhism, it lines up with the second noble truth that there are things that make us suffer, such as, you know, this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a very broad concept as well, because it's basically saying, like, anything you identify with, that's your ego. So even saying, like, oh, I really like the color green or something, like, that's your ego in a way, because that's not actually the essence of who you are. But there's other more sinister, I guess, thought processes that are also associated with ego, like, oh, I'm unlovable, or, for example, like, oh, I hate men or something like that, because the egoic mind is completely conditioned by the past, which makes sense. Like, everything we believe has to be built from somewhere, which are most likely going to be our past experiences, and they're unconsciously reaffirmed throughout our life. So the more we experience certain things and hold on to them and identify with them, the more that we continue to see them in the future. So if you've been like, I just have this example because, you know, I feel like people can relate to it, but if you've been treated poorly by men in the past and continue to experience or perceive negative interactions with them, it will build like this identity for you and also for them. And this can go with a lot of different like intergroup relations, I guess, too, like not just, oh, women versus men, or like, you know, different races, different nationalities. I think a lot of people like get caught up in these comparisons. And yeah, like what you react to in another, you strengthen in yourself, which I thought is kind of an interesting thing.
Yeah.
People get really upset at certain things, or they find certain things very like cringe or like horrible.
Yeah. No, definitely. Because then it just reaffirms your own insecurities, because you've just agreed with what you've thought of instead of, you know, acknowledging it or realizing it's happening.
Mm-hmm. And especially that's very like in alignment with the general kind of idea of like, oh, what you hate others, or you hate others for what you see in yourself. And I never really knew if that was true. Like, oh, can I not just hate someone who is acting like a racist? Can't swear on this show, but you know, who's just who's being racist or something. Does that mean
you're racist?
I'm racist, or like vice versa, you know, like what is it always true? I don't know.
Yeah, because then it's like, you know, wild example, Kim Jong-un. I feel like most of us hate Kim Jong-un, but it's not like we see ourselves as dictators who kill and who make so many people suffer, but just the fact that we know he does stuff like this, like, do we hate ourselves for hating him? That doesn't make too much sense, in my opinion, too.
But do we hate him because we see how, like,
he makes
it could happen in a way? Like, how it could happen to anyone to be, like, because, yeah, he is a dictator, but I wonder what his childhood was like and stuff.
No, he had a good childhood. I know it. I read a little bit of his biography a couple years ago. He had a good life. I know it.
But was he raised by, like, someone who was also kind of endorsing these dictatorship views?
This guy had, like, a second cabin with some water slides, I remember. And then he went to Europe for school, too, abroad, because he could have... I don't want to give a whole picture
anyway.
Here. But, yeah, anyways. You mean, no, there's some sense in that as well. But I guess, as everything, it's up to interpretation of this idea of hating things in ourselves.
Mm-hmm. But other than that, there's a lot of talk in this book about the identity of being a victim and how that's perpetuated by ego, which I thought was kind of interesting, because there's so many people have like such huge attachments to horrible things that happen to them in their lives, which is just natural. Like, that's kind of a part of getting traumatized or having something traumatic happen, but then attaching this label of like victim onto yourself and then seeing it happen and again. And the thing is, like, maybe it does happen. Like, maybe you are a victim, but at the same time, how much of that are you like including into your identity that like reaffirms your ego. So that's what they're talking about in this book a lot.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Huh. I definitely need to take a look more into this book. I just know that outside of it, that along with the Buddhism and the more religion part of it and philosophy is the suffering of the ego itself, you know, of the fact that it can make you do certain things if it's overinflated, if it's weak. And the only way to be free from this really is to be aware of your thoughts and emotions as they happen, which is really hard. This is why we all have an ego in some sense. There's no way there's anyone out there who has a perfectly neutral ego, you know? There's got to be something that pushes their buttons. Unless you're like a Buddhist monk, I don't know. They must even have their own
issues.
There's
got to be something.
But it is crazy. Like, for me, my own ego can be weak sometimes because, for example, like, when I was younger, I struggled a lot with appearance and still do now. So then even when someone's doing something, like someone's successful and they're beautiful, I'm like, I kind of don't like them. And I don't know why. And I'm like, oh, well, and I know why. So there's just things like that. But it can also go the other way around where I know some people who have kind of an inflated ego.
Because it's always just at the end of the day, like compensating, like if it's a weak ego or a strong ego, it's like compensating for your insecurities in some way. But a lot of the things that ego wants to maintain too is like this sense of superiority, like this moral superiority. And that's also part of like the victim complex, is like because you're a victim of someone who has like done something that is, you know, morally wrong, that does kind of give you a sense of like, well, I would never do that to anyone, you know? And to uphold like the I am part of your ego, there must be someone who's like the other, or a group who's the other,
right?
And
it's like, I am smart means someone else is dumb.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Right. So then maybe the better thing to do is not even think you're smart. You just exist and do things.
Yeah, apparently.
I guess because that is what is supposed to lead you to, you know, the path of enlightenment, for example, where you just detach yourself from all labels and meanings that you think you are. Like feeling smart, for example.
Like you're just nothing, but then at the same time you're everything. Because I do think everyone does have a little bit of everything in them. Like nobody's fully good, nobody's fully evil or smart or dumb, or like there's you know, people are very multifaceted, but it's hard. Like some people are just funny and some people like aren't that much, you know. I don't know.
Does that, I guess it's how they face it, if they think themselves, if they're, you know, like when someone has an like when someone's funny and they have an ego, you're like, they know they're funny. Yeah. But then if someone doesn't have an ego and they're funny, you're like, oh, that's great, you know. They just
Is that like your ego reacting to their ego? Because you can sense that they have like an inflated one, and you're like,
just a little cycle.
Anyway.
What I find interesting, or that I'm curious about, is with this ego, that people have weak ones or inflated ones, and what type of person, you know, goes into each realm, you know, because like you could be insecure about your appearance, for example, and you could either, number one, raise yourself up all the time and be like, oh yeah, everyone wants me, like I'm the prettiest in the room, all these guys like me. Or on the other hand, you could be like, no one likes me, I'm so ugly, you know, that kind of way. And so I wonder if that's something to do with, you know, not sure, gender, I feel like, social cues, social roles, but that's just my off-topic thought.
No, I think, like, different, I have kind of an answer for that, but it's not to do with gender roles or anything, but in the book, at least, it was saying that a weak ego is associated with kind of, like, actually feeling superior to others, but then you're acting as if you're inferior in some way. Like, I don't know, maybe this is a bad example, but, you know, people who are, like, really shy, they might act like they're kind of, you know, closed off, and they are, like, very insecure about themselves. But I know a lot of shy people, maybe this is a generalization, but they're silent because they're like judging you.
Yeah.
And they're like kind of like taking in and observing in a way, so they are able to judge based on how other people are presenting themselves and then gain a sense of superiority in that way.
That is true. I think I have met some quiet judgmental people, but I've also met some quiet people at the same time.
quiet people.
Like they just kind of keep to themselves in a way, but who knows if they're silently judging you or if they just are burnt out mentally, socially burnt out, you know.
Yeah, anyway, there's definitely a lot of different reasons for having a weak or an inflated ego, but it's all a way to kind of just cope with feeling inferior in some way, shape, or form, and then how that manifests is different. But yeah, anyways, with the morality of the ego, this kind of makes me a bit confused, because are we saying that morality is just a way for us to like be identified with something that is like quote unquote good, so our like superiority complex feels better? Or is there actually this duty to be moral beings and to like say what's right or wrong? It's just a question. I know it's a big one, because the whole solution is like to connect to our common humanity rather than criticizing one another for different aspects of how we treat others and think about ourselves. But
so if no one had an ego is what you're saying, or more that?
Yeah, basically, like if no one had an ego, or because this is also just like an individual thing at this point. Like this book is just like you have to practice it for yourself. So if we were to practice it and stop like morally condemning people.
I think I put some notes here about that. If everyone didn't have an ego, that I feel like the world would still stay the same in some way, because I'm not too sure myself, but I don't know if ego and morals exist on the same realm. Mm-hmm. In a way, like, are they separate? Are they together? Like, does ego come with morals? I'm guessing somewhat, but also somewhat not. For example, there's this term called the yuck factor, which is this pre-rational negative response of certain practices. And this is part of your morals. And so, for example, you can have this like internal yuck feeling at the feeling of cloning, like, you know, being able to clone ourselves. Like, ooh, we don't want to do that.
Yuck.
Yuck. But then on the other hand, beforehand, we said for homophobia, we're like, ugh, you know, gay people. No. And then now we're accepting of it. So we've gone against that initial yuck feeling. Is that even something that is always part of us? Is this something that will always happen? Because that yuck feeling also supports, you know, sexism, homophobia, even racism, like, ooh, like all these people of color kind of thing. And it's something that is really tricky for me. I couldn't figure out. So I just had these points in my mind. And I feel like there's also maybe some issues with, back to the hunter-gatherer things, like do people think like we come from traditional roles and this is where the ego comes from? Is this where our morals come from? Is there anything part of that? And so obviously, like, it's a very gray area of what will happen, but I personally think no for this question, but I'm not sure. What do you think?
Well, I think it's interesting that you brought up the idea of the yuck factor, because it is more of a physiological response than a certain thought that you're identified with. And I think a lot of the counter behaviors you can do to like combat your ego are being awareness of your feelings, but not necessarily your thoughts. So yeah, the yuck factor is, you know, kind of stemming from feelings. But are our feelings not informed by
the ego,
like social norms and social cues, like you were saying too? Because yeah, we can go back and look at how we acted as hunter-gatherers as well, but this is also kind of a nature versus nurture question too. Like, is the yuck factor integral to us, or do we develop it based on what is right or wrong in society at the time, and how we also like mirror other people's reactions to, like, you know, the queer community or something?
Yeah, that was the whole problem with it, is that before they thought it was wisdom in a way, like, oh, that must be right. But then we changed our views on homophobia based off how society saw them, saw LGBTQ people before and after a couple decades. So maybe this isn't something to be factored in for everything. But I guess it's more of my question of, like, how much of its morals, I guess, are morals built from the ego?
I think so. Because, like, a lot of our morals is like, I think this is wrong or I think this is right. And there's so many different schools of morality and philosophy that, and people are like arguing so vigorously for each of their sides that it doesn't seem like it's, you know, just based on a feeling. Like, they are fully identified and they're arguing so hard for it that it's got to be more of an opinion than an actual fact.
I wonder what's behind the ego then. Maybe that's the question.
What is behind the ego?
Or is the ego the ultimate, you know, reigning factor in our brain?
Can we learn from the ego? Like, or should we? Because, I mean, the whole point of this philosophy is acknowledging the ego will actually lead to more of a dissolution of it. And that's how we achieve spiritual realization. And which seems like, you know, kind of a far stretch. It's like, okay, we just need to acknowledge the ego, parts of our identity that feed on suffering, and then we can be spiritually realized. And yeah. Does the ego just fade away?
Is it just there? Are we, like, petting it? Or are we feeding it? Or yeah, for this, I feel like it's, like, in everything, everyone's like, okay, just acknowledge the feeling, let it pass. That's the solution for
everything.
Let it pass. Let it pass. Just let it, like, walk on by. Don't even touch it. It's not a part of you. But how? You know? And I'm... My brain just stopped working.
No, it's like... It stumps me because I've tried doing it. And maybe I haven't done it enough. Because it is a huge process to rewire your brain to constantly acknowledge that every thought, feeling, or behavior that you have is not necessarily who you are.
Yeah, because then you can kind of dissociate, like, detach once again, because every thought, every action you say is ego.
Yeah, and, like, I do kind of feel like there are some things that are who you are. Like, if someone in your family passes away or something, and you're feeling extremely sad and, like, thinking about all the memories that you had with them and grieving them, like, are you just going to be like, oh, that's my ego?
Let's detach. Let's get out of here.
But I think it's also like you can experience the emotions, but you just don't associate or identify with the thought processes that are associated. So you can be really sad, but you don't need to necessarily like run through all of, yeah, in the same example, like all of these memories that are making you really sad. But isn't that part of grief? Is like,
and isn't that who we are, the essence of humans themselves? Like, what if we all just let feelings pass? I feel like we'd all... What would we do? I feel like we'd all be just bodies at that point, just like physical bodies walking around. Like, we've got no attachment to anything or any thought or feeling.
Maybe that's the goal. It's like you're just
motionless robots.
You're spiritually realized. You're on like a different plane of existence now.
Yeah, it's like when you walk, it's like slow motion and it's, you've got nothing going on in your head. That's what I think.
Okay, maybe.
Maybe in a good way.
It's a bit of an exaggeration.
This is why my episode last time was the nihilism episode, because it just, my ego's pushing through. My ego's pushing through here.
It's huge. It's massive.
My massive, massive ego. Anyways, back on, on the path.
Yeah, basically we're trying to get to the essence of being, just the awareness of the ego, awareness of our identity. And it's kind of like connected to meditation in some ways, because you're just really focusing and honing in on the awareness rather than your thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Meditation's hard though.
Oh, don't even get me started. I've been trying every day. I've been doing at least, I think like five to seven minutes, very specific, every day to try to meditate. So I've been doing it for about a couple weeks now. It is hard because I feel like no one really says what to do when you meditate. Like, I sit there and I'm like, all right, am I supposed to visualize something? And it's like sheep going on in my head. Like, what is going on right now? And they're like, no, just detach from your thoughts. And so I'm like, okay. So I just have my thoughts here. And then sometimes I'm like, oh, gotta do laundry, you know, like, oh, wow. Just happened to me. Like, wow. And I'm supposed to just let it clear and then just sit there. But I feel like I haven't felt really any different in day-to-day life as much. Maybe this is not a good time for me to be experimenting with this and sharing my thoughts because I've been not like the most emotionally stable for the past while. But that's just what I've been thinking. But I do think after some time, it does help a lot with realizing this ego. And I think, yeah, there are definitely a lot of benefits that seem to take place now, or take place after figuring out how to let emotions pass.
Yeah, I agree. We can talk about some of the benefits and drawbacks before wrapping up our conversation topic, because mm-hmm. I think we've just been throwing the word ego at you for quite a while now.
It's like ego. Yeah, ego, you probably want to hear something else.
But I think one of the drawbacks that we mentioned at the beginning is like, when will it ever be enough? Because there's like the self-improvement to spiritual enlightenment. Once you get to spiritual enlightenment, are you good? Like, you don't need to work anymore. I guess you need to work to like maintain it. But
I mean, technically, like, your life ends at that point and you're just a being and you just start glowing into the sun kind of thing. Like, that's
oh, technically.
Technically, yeah. That's what's supposed to happen. Nirvana. But yeah. I guess that's not going to happen. But I do see the self-improvement thing. We've talked about it, about the gym bro community. You know, it's like, let's optimize every part
Boo,
of the day.
The gym bro community.
No offense to them. Like,
just kidding,
go
guys.
To the gym, be free. Mm-hmm. But then when it's that point, I see those YouTube videos and they're like, grind every day. Wake up like Metatron. And like, they like get out of the bed and they like move like robots and they immediately brush their teeth. And then they
wake up, grind, pee,
and they take
grind.
Fish oil, you know, like, it's like all these things to optimize their every day and always be self-improving, you know, like. Looks maxing, for example. Oh, for God's sake. Oh, for God's sake. What are these guys
Wait,
do?
Is this just looks maxing, but like spiritual maxing?
That's what I was thinking. Yeah. I'm like, are we just spiritual maxing our lives? Like, is there also a point of being too much spiritual? Spiritualist? Spiritualness?
Don't listen to us.
We are also self-improving by talking about this.
Too much spirituality? Probably. I think there's like a certain amount of disconnect from like political issues especially that I've noticed with like hyper-spiritual people. And they're just like peace and love. But a lot of things can't actually be solved through having this neutral, peaceful mindset.
Yeah, it's just individualism at that point. Like, oh, the world's burning, but I'm meditating, you know? like, come on. I'm going to this away. Like,
yeah. I'm just going to, like, move my family to, like, a homestead. And whatever's going on in the world, we don't need that. It's okay. We're just going to garden.
I think our egos also.
Maybe
our egos, maybe
we're coming
also.
Out right now.
But, yeah, that's what I was thinking about lately, because I feel like all these, like, self-help books in general, too. It's like, should we be caring about other things? But then it's like, if we can't start with ourselves, how do we help others also is the argument. Like, mm-hmm. if we are at a point where we're so self-improved and we've grown and we're self-actualized, yada, 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 and then now we can help others.
But is that even realistic, though? Like, this book is basically saying, oh, it's going to be a new earth once everyone realizes their egos and starts, I guess that's all you need to do is just realize your ego and be aware of your ego.
But capitalism can't just die after everyone reads the book, though. You know?
Yeah, like, so, like, every other, like, structure of oppression is going to wither away once people are like, I don't hate myself.
Maybe I shouldn't buy this $200 coffee machine, you know? Like, I'm going to own my life.
Yeah, so that is a very big question. Question mark. Gosh. When I was reading that book, it's just like, I guess I'm trying to tie it into the morality, too, is...
we're just throwing jabs at this book now. Yeah,
it's kind of, we're like, let's talk about the drawbacks.
Boom. One pro, 40 yeah. cons.
Yeah, there's pros, but I don't know.
Yeah,
we don't
need
to, like,
the idea of it is still good. Like, of course we should be trying to, you know, be better people, reduce our ego so other people can enjoy being happier too. Because it's not fun being around a person who's like has such an inflated ego. Mm-hmm. So it is good to have everyone, you know, work on it. I don't think we'll reach this new age, unfortunately, but the idea is nice.
People are worried about other stuff at this point.
Yeah. But then yeah. It's like, what should we be worried about? I don't know. It's like,
it's a good practice. I feel like if you're into journaling or if you're into any kind of meditation or spirituality, to practice the awareness of the ego and not identify with your thoughts and be like, this is who I am, because your thoughts aren't necessarily who you are. Mm-hmm. A lot of times they're like uncontrollable and invasive, kind of like, I don't know, uncontrollable in the sense like breathing is kind of uncontrollable, or like your heartbeat. So thoughts are kind of similar in that way, but more difficult to control sometimes, even because I can control my breathing better than I can control my thoughts.
Oh yeah. Anyway. I don't know, but yeah, me sometimes, I guess.
Once in a while.
But yeah, I think the centric, the most beneficial thing to take out of this is the understanding of the ego and just trying to let things pass. Meditation always is still the number one tip that they give to fight passing emotions, which fights your ego. But it gets to that point where if you try to self-improve your ego so much, then maybe it can go a little downhill from there.
Mm-hmm. And I think that is a good wrap-up point for our topic and our show today, because it is almost 7 p.m. when Lynn will be taking over with her open mic, I guess. And then Bitcoover is at 8 p.m. with our music director, Connor, so stay tuned for that. Yeah, thank you for listening to Slumber Party this week. We appreciate it. And
I think we got time for one more song.
One more song is going to be Genesis by Grimes, which is slightly more on theme than our other music, but hey.
Hey, I think we didn't get to tie in Pony.
We didn't get to tie in Pony.
Pony away those thoughts.
Yeah, maybe like the act of doing the dolphin kick is like being in your body, because it's a form of meditation. You're not really thinking about who you are, who I am, you're just feeling the music, and that way your ego is kind of dissolved in the moment you're doing a dolphin kick to Pony. There we go.
Good. Nice.
Okay. Anyways.
And free from embarrassment.
And free from embarrassment. Free from your ego. Here is Genesis by Grimes. See you next week.
Bye.
See you guys next week, Tuesdays at 6 p.m.